bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends. How are we doing?
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody. That's me.
We probably should have answered your question just then. Like, you posed a direct question of how we're doing, and then we all just stared at you.
It was rhetorical.
Okay.
It was rhetorical. And I imagine everybody listening answered to themselves.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Andrew, how are you doing?
Well, to your statement that it's rhetorical, was it?
I refuse to answer that question on the grounds I may incriminate myself.
So I want a show of hands here. Who has had a haircut since the pandemic started?
Well,
gone to a barbershop or
I'm gonna need a clarification.
I have full on not gotten a single hair trimmed by any human. I mean, except for my facial hair, which I feel comfortable doing myself. But I'm enjoying going back to the 1970s, like. Years from now, we'll be able to look at photos from this time and it'll be like, oh, that those were the COVID days. The fashion was to just let your hair grow because you couldn't go to a barber.
I have not gone to a professional, but at a certain point, my wife, who is trying to level up her quarantine wife skill set, had gotten bored with making sourdough bread and had turned to the next thing on quarantine wife checklist, which was to cut her husband's hair. And that was the give back for her letting me go to Tulsa to cover the politics stuff. So that's what I got. My only haircut.
I've got a shaver set, so I have touched my hair up myself, and I got a shaver, so I do my facial hair and all, but I have not gone to a professional since before the pandemic started.
I might go full mullet, it's been the mullet has been a punchline for over 20 years now, which means it's probably due to come back. So when I do get a haircut, I might full on mullet up.
I mean, could make an argument that the mullet was kind of coming back.
I had a Skype call with somebody who had a haircut, like clear on haircut. And I'm like, I was starting to feel like, who are you? Like, what have you been doing? Have you been sneaking out getting, you know, I was like that ready to like just turn somebody in, which is not a good instinct.
Wow. So I suddenly realized like, haircuts are now a political statement. How weird is that? If somebody, you know, just, you know, full on shaves their head, then it's safe to say that they probably did it by themselves at home. But if somebody goes and gets professionally coiffed, then, you know, in this mask, no mask, red, blue duopoly, it's probably a statement.
But it's like if you wear no mask, you're like, no, I had it. I'm clear. I have the antibodies. And then if you have a professionally done haircut, like, no, I live with a hairstylist. No, really. It's fine.
We need
to see a certificate and some proof of this.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, one gentleman said, hey, I'm not going to deal with this. Enough is enough. And have you seen the video of the quarantine haircut robot?
No. Is it a Flowbee?
Oh, no, Brian, it's better. So say you're a roboticist and you're like, hey, I build robots. And we'll get into one of the sort of the general problems with robotics in a moment. But this guy's like, I got a solution. I'm going to build myself a quarantine robot haircut machine.
Oh, my gosh.
And you see the image and it looks like somebody made their own version of Saw.
It does look like somebody is about to be murdered.
Describe this to everybody.
So he's popped up through like a little porthole. Like he's on display as one of the heads from Futurama.
Exactly. Yeah, this is like if you were doing a bit
on the Jetsons.
Where he was like being served as dinner at some macabre dinner party. His head is like popped up as if it were like going to be revealed by a big silver dome or something.
Also,
it is weird.
It also looks like he's about to write a song with the refrain two turntables and a microphone. Like,
he
has a very, very late 90s Beck kind of vibe.
But if you told me this guy built a robot to cut his hair, I'd believe you. There's something about just the face, the look. I'm like, yes, I believe this band is capable of doing a competent job of that.
So we're watching the time lapse of him doing it. So I guess this looks like kind of the vacuum haircut device a little bit, but
it's an armature that rotates around where his head goes through, so it can rotate around there, and there's a little machine to cut it. He's used computer vision to figure out where his head is, so it's basically the computer's trying to figure out where his head is in three-dimensional space, and it goes in and it uses a thing that looks not unlike some sort of chomper.
Well, the best part is his facial expression is constantly surprised and confused, like the entire video along.
I mean, what else would you look like?
He's the one who built the damn thing. You would think that he would not be surprised.
This poor dude is alone in his garage thinking, is my landlord going to come in here and find my decapitated head? And they're going to go, must have been a suicide.
Brian, I can only imagine what you believed the face of the Wright brothers were as they took off. Like, you know, I'm sure it wasn't like a confident pirate sailing through the sky. It was like they probably looked like they're about to poop themselves, which is what this guy looks like.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So the way it works is really clever. He uses a vacuum to pull up the hair, and then actual scissors, not a buzzer, like little scissors come in cutting snip 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 away, much like a stylist pulling on your hair cutting. It's really, this is not a Flowbee. This is actually doing a very, you know,
so
from a good starting point cut, it's using actual, it's at barber scissors to cut his hair, which makes it more terrifying.
Which I suppose means that whatever software runs it, like you could full on select a particular haircut and see a simulation of what it will look like before you even begin.
Yeah, I think like this is amusing. I think that upper end hairstyling is always going to be, have a place, or always going to be people who want to go in there and get a haircut from like, you know, a person talking to them and stuff. But for like people like me who are, if I can just stick my head in a box and pull it out like 5 minutes later and have a haircut, done. It is my least favorite activity that I have to do on a regular basis.
Get a haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's crazy. I mean, it doesn't look terrible. I guess we're watching the video now on silent.
So he's explaining that some of the issues are that it couldn't get close to his ears, or I guess to the hairline at the back of his head. So he's got a little bit of a mullet and some chops, but those are relatively easy enough to.
I mean, that's a fine haircut. Like if he with a straight face said this is my favorite haircut, I think I'd believe him.
Credit to this dude. This dude, man, living the dream. Robot haircut and didn't get stabbed in the face or eyeball with a robot scissor.
So this is Shane Whiten. His YouTube channel is Stuff Made Here. And he's done other really cool stuff too. He's a really capable builder. There's some people you watch them build stuff and you're like, okay. And you watch this guy, some of his builds, I think, are really, really smart stuff. He's a guy that knows what he's doing. So,
yeah, I don't know. I think I'm too into the idea of just growing my hair out right now. Like, just because I in my lifetime, I don't think I'll have another opportunity like this to do so. Maybe get a perm.
Now, Justin, am I remembering right? Didn't you go to a robotic barber a few months ago in Oakland? Or wasn't there one in, like, near you that you made a whole thing of, like, going to go
do? Or was it a robotic arborist?
Like what? Yeah, I swear. You were going to try to, at
I
least.
Agree. There was something about that. Somebody had some sort of, like, robot something. We're totally
Are
Mandela
you guys gaslighting
effect.
Me? Like, what
no,
the hell
no,
are you talking
no,
about?
No.
No, no, no.
That was a legit
I said
thing.
That
I am gaslighting. These other two seem
this,
to think
this guy,
they're talking
he would,
something.
He would buzz up your, he
yes,
would buzz up your edges.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Okay, I remember us talking about it. There was never any serious thought to doing it, though.
You were gaslighting us. Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't. And besides, this is just a dude. Like, he wasn't offering, was he? Like, I think he was just like,
I think.
Oh, was he?
I think so. Because,
man, Justin, like, way to turn on your friends here. You're like, I was never gonna do that. Oh, it's real, but no, he wasn't offering it. No, he's charging $6 a neck cut. I don't have $6. It's all in Bitcoin. Yeah.
This was 7 months ago, so
you know how we could get $6 is if people headed on over to patreon.com/weirdthings in support of this little show.
Absolutely. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can give me money to get my haircut that I'm definitely going to get now.
Just
and I'm currently making a real
big
deal about it. Just my neck fuzz, though. That's it. Nothing else. No, patreon.com/weirdthings. This is.
The other guy, that was a problem. His didn't do the neckline.
These guys got to get together. Right. Yeah.
This is why you need to bring these geniuses.
Yeah.
Got to bring the genius together.
So there we go. Check it out. I've been saying this on all the Patreon reads lately. The best thing about Patreon is you get the custom RSS feed at any level. You're giving any amount of money, you're getting that custom RSS feed. You put it in your pod catcher and you're just going to get these episodes just a little bit earlier. The way that it works is, you know, a Patreon just updates a lot faster than some of these other directories. It is worth it. Go get it. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Yeah.
I thought we'd do another robot story because there was something that came, announcement that came out last week about a new consumer or, you know, all-purpose sort of robot. And again, you know, those are the things that we think about, oh, the future, we're going to see robots. You know, that's going to be the thing that's going to come out. And robots are kind of complicated because one of the challenges of robotics is that we're often trying to build robots that look like people when a lot of the tasks that people used to do, now we have more complicated machines do them.
Right.
So it's kind of like we're building things. This would be great in the 19th century, you know, here, but there are a lot of edge cases where they look at. Here's a cool robot. If you go to the website is hello-robot.com. And what they've built is this sort of, it's looks like almost like an IV stand kind of thing. It's a big, tall stand, and it has an arm that moves up and down. And the advantage of this is that it's able to sort of, it doesn't look like a human, but it looks like, you know, clearly a machine. It looks like something out of Star Wars.
Imagine a Roomba with a broom on top and an arm that is on the broom, right?
And the arm extends out. That's the key thing, is this arm can extend several feet out beyond. So we're watching the thing vacuum a couch right now. We watched it pick up like a dog's toy. And because that arm extends all the way out and back, it can go across counters. It can open up cabinets.
Oh,
it can reach inside. We're going to watch it pull laundry out.
Now, what was the bot that was supposed to just watch you do things and then copy you? Man, that must have been like 5 years ago.
Yeah, there have been some, like, that's one of the things they try to do is do that. Now we're watching this thing right on the wall, you know, with precision.
Ah, so it's like a tighter toddler.
Yeah, but I mean, exactly. Help me. So it's got this big, tall pole. It's got a camera mounted to that, and it's got the arm that just slides up and down and then goes backwards and forwards. It's better just to go look at the video from Hello Robot, but you're watching the thing do a lot of precise tasks, open drawers, you know, reach into spaces and things.
But
it's got
the trick and the immediate question that I have is the training of it, because I totally believe that all of this could be programmed and arranged to do these things, but I wonder how easy it is to just say, hey, clean this room. Just tidy everything up.
Well, that's a big part of what they're working on. That's the big thing. You know, one step one is, like you say, have the hardware, but then how do you get the hardware to do it? And they showed, you know, some of the video of an autonomous mode. And the goal is to be able to give things tasks to be able to solve and let it figure out how to do that. And that's where, you know, we're getting to that part where that's the much bigger problem. But things are, they're getting very, very smart at solving problems and how to do this. We've seen this before with, you know, different AI companies building AI to play video games and to sort of solve, do problem solving.
Yeah.
And I think this is, you know, kind of scaling that.
So right now I'm looking around our studio, and I 5 years ago I would describe it as a nightmare for AI, because we have a bunch of wires just laying out all over the place. We have three different throw rugs. We've got various objects on tables. But now, in a world of machine learning, I think I believe that you could give it general instructions, like maybe just start with straighten up as an instruction. And then basically it looks at all of the cables and says, well, that is a not straight cable. Let me straighten it up. And then now that it is straight, let me apply a little bit of sticky tape to make every cable straight. And so maybe it's not the way you would do it, but when the following day you would walk in and all of the wires would be straight. And then you could do another one where it's like, remove dust. And then, I mean, I don't know. This doesn't seem so far away from sincerely practical at this point.
And that's what we're looking right now, is they're showing how it enters a room and it starts to scan the room in 3D. And so it builds an entire map of the room, a 3D map of it. And that's how it navigates around. And then it can do things like, oh, it identified this as a coffee table surface. And now, you know, it figures out how to map. It's going to go pick up the remote control, and because it looks over and sees this.
Yeah. Well, and even if it's just straighten things up, like I can imagine going to bed at night and waking up and the mishmash of for example, I have a bunch of soda cans on here. It's probably not a big deal for it to evaluate full or half full. If it's half full, then, you know, take it over to the sink, pour it out, throw it away. And if it's empty, throw it away. If it's full, set it in the corner in an aesthetically pleasing format.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, get me a beer.
Yeah. Although that one, it's like, I don't know. You know, it's going to take forever, and it'll probably be the wrong, you know, like, I said an IPA. Come on.
Let's see. But it is a neat sort of step. And part of what's cool about this thing is they make a big deal about how easy it is to move this robot around, because I think weight wise, I don't remember exactly what it weighs, but it's not, you know, several hundreds of pounds. And this is the thing that you can move in and out. And we've seen that before. Like,
oh, wow.
There was an example of, oh, 50
pounds.
It only
weighs 50 pounds. That's insane. I'll tell you, I think the way you set this up is really the kind of key, which is we're looking for the form of what will be the most like functional and not necessarily Rosie the robot. And as we get more, you know, into the future of cementing what this like class of device is going to be and how it's going to interact with our lives, that's going to be part of it, is figuring out, well, all right, like what do we expect from it aesthetically? What do we expect from it functionally? And this is certainly on the other side of like, hey, look, this isn't going to look like something, you know, it's not going to be as aesthetically pleasing as even a Roomba, but if it actually like does everything that it seems like it can do, you're not going to care. It's going to be a status symbol that it looks like something different.
Well, and now that I think about it, like, we're not even going to need to teach it anything, because most likely what will happen is we will set up the, step one, set up the room however you want it to be. If you want it to be clean and swept, then have it be cleaned and swept. If you want, you know, whatever everything being perfectly organized on your coffee table should look like, make it look that way. You know, if you want cables arranged a certain way, arrange cables in that certain way. And then just overnight, it's going to go around and remember that picture of well, everything needs to be, it's going to be the perfect OCD bot where it's just going to say like, well, that's not where that's supposed to be. And then just fuss all night long.
Yeah. And that's part of too, as you think about, you know, when you start moving more towards the Internet of Things, the idea that let's say you have a smart washing machine and this just needs to know darks from light colored and separate them. And it knows to put them into different things. And then in the smart washing machine, it knows, oh, I'm ready to, the door's closed. I know it's time to start. Are they all connected? And I think that's one of the things you're going to see is a lot of individual intelligent device, an intelligent fridge, an intelligent microwave, et cetera. And then a robot that sort of can connect between them all.
Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about it, looking at the studio, like I could imagine walking and leaving, let's say the X32 board is still running and it'll be all like, well, these lights shouldn't be on. These should be turned off. Touch, 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 touch. This is supposed to be shut down through this procedure and so on. That's crazy.
Yeah, I could see it while we're doing a show, just sitting there running the board.
Yeah. I don't see it providing cutting commentary and the perfect amount of snark.
Yeah.
Right. we've already seen OpenAI's GPT-3, how it could replace us in what we talk about. So, you know.
Oh, God. We're on the way out, boys.
It's going to be a robot of the switchboard, just three different algorithms generating the show. And
we're just dinosaurs looking up at that bright dot in the sky and wondering why it keeps getting bigger.
It's so funny because like we have enough content that we could feed into OpenAI, you know, 10 years of our program. And then the next step I think in my mind is, oh, that'd be fun to have it auto-generate an episode of Weird Things. And then we could act it out. And then the next thought I have is, why would we do that when there's other artificially intelligent programs that will just speak for us in our actual voices? Like, we're going to get defeated by, within 5 years, we're going to get defeated by a Turing test of, hey, is this an episode of Weird Things You Actually Did or not? And we won't know.
We can't even remember our own episodes now, so yes. It's not that hard.
I'm setting a very low bar.
I was going to say, yeah, look, my thicket of neck fuzz says that we are not good at remembering anything.
So I have a plan for when we've decided to just like turn on the robot versions of ourselves to go do our jobs. Mm-hmm. What if we just get some really luxury van campers and go cross country, staying at different, really nice, high end trailer parks?
Okay, it sounds awesome.
There's a company called Kibbo, K-I-B-B-O, which is basically that's their plan. Is the idea that you pay like they're charging? Are you starting memberships now? You pay like $1,000 a month, and basically you get a number of different of these. They call them, I think, exclusive RV parks. You know. Kitchen supplies, gyms, recreation stuff, all that. And then if you want, you can rent one of their, like the Sprinters, you know, those are kind of the really nice vans. And so it's kind of a neat idea because if you want to have that kind of, you know, wanderlust sort of lifestyle, but to sort of do it in a way that's, you know, a little more.
And not only are the wanderlust lifestyle makes it sound like, you know, that's for retirees or so on. I've seen an awful lot of traction among young millennials who are doing it as a cost-effective measure to, you know, so that
well, that's
they can
exactly
bank.
How I was thinking. I think wanderlust, I think old people sort of sitting around, you know, waiting for, you know, the next episode of, you know, Downton Abbey. I'm thinking like, yeah, no, you're young, you can be super mobile. We have a lot of people now doing, you know, remote commuting, et cetera. So,
yeah, I mean, two of our friends built their own Sprinter van. So the idea that you would be able to, you know, just rent one or have those options, like, I think that that's just a natural progression. Like, that just, that makes as much sense to me as Airbnb did.
Yeah, the
go
only
take a look at the only thing I think is, by the way.
Yeah, the only thing that I think is crazy is when they're showing a whole family in a car, because no. That's a
we're
luxury.
We're not seeing that on their website. We're seeing all adults doing this right now.
With the very first episode or picture has a family hanging out. And
no,
I'm just
they're
like,
They're all grown-ups?
Very tiny grown-ups.
Yeah, they're small.
One's sitting, Brian. Mm. They're sitting.
All right, well.
No, yeah, it definitely looks like a camping trip. Like, this is a group of five people that are going on a camping trip somewhere that are out in the wilderness. But when you have the ability to, just have a little bit more room, then it just makes the trip easier. And, I mean, in terms of five people, it's hard to sleep inside the Sprinter, I would say. That's a little crowded. But certainly if you're out camping and, you know, you put a tent out or whatever, like that's very feasible.
Just get five of those. Everybody have them all robotically, you know, chain up together and and
no, I like this idea that we do like a wacky races, a cannonball run in Sprinter vans that, you know, ends in periodic glamping.
So they're having locations in Ojai, Zion, Black Rock Desert, Big Sur, and, you know, basically it's going to, you know, obviously a West Coast kind of thing for now. At the campgrounds, they have Wi-Fi, fresh facilities, which I guess maybe bathrooms and showers, laundry, a cozy common spaces, you know, full kitchen, stock refrigerator, and pantry, and other sites and gear. So it's kind of like an outfitter sort of thing, too.
Yeah. So that's the idea, is that this is like a lifestyle thing where now you can go, like, you are always going to be in the position to stop at a place and, you know, kind of get things done.
Let me read their pitch for a second.
Sure.
Kibbo is a new way to live and work wherever you want without giving up relationships or the comforts of home. For less than the cost of living in a studio apartment, we could, let's talk about where that is. We give you a top-of-the-line Sprinter van, a network of home bases across the West, essential groceries and provisions, Wi-Fi, an inclusive adventurous community. There you go. Everything you need to live an extraordinary life. Don't shelter in place. Shelter any place. Brian, go.
Well, we talked about, we mused about what it would be like to live in a more urbanized version of the same thing, where it's like you had a room that that everything was always custom configured, like because every piece of art on the wall was e-ink, it could be all of your posters. Because they were modular, they could physically move. Like maybe you didn't know where your room was, you just followed the line to get there, and then when you got there, maybe it was the same physical room you slept in last night, maybe it wasn't, but it didn't matter. Because, you know, the closet with all your personal effects was shuttled from one place to another. This is kind of shockingly close to that, where only with diesel run engines.
The appeal, it sounds neat at first, but then you're like, oh, I'm going to spend the next 2 years living in a van and sharing picnic tables, which for some people is like, yes, sign me up.
Right.
Where I kind of like the idea of, like, I would rather have the much larger sort of micro house or whatever, you know, and move, go from place to place like that.
So here's the deal. All right. Basic membership, $189 a month. And that, I assume, just makes you, gets you a merit badge or something like that. Full-time clubhouse access. So now, I guess you are able to eat and drink and stay. That's $1,000. And if you want a van, it is $1,500 a month, which I will say in the areas that they are pitching this to, which are largely LA and the Bay Area. Like, if you are willing to say, I don't live in an apartment, that's not terrible.
I don't know. $1,500 a month gets you a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom in Austin, one of the hottest real estate markets in the country.
I mean, but that's not where these are. That's, and it doesn't get you much in Oakland. Doesn't get you much in San Francisco. Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't get you much in LA. I mean, depending on where you want to live in LA.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, for what they're selling, for the places that they're selling it, like, I don't know. It looks competitive to me.
I mean, and keep in mind, I am genuinely a fan of the weirder, the better. Everybody try everything. But man, would this not be a good fit for me and the 5 people in my family? And
I don't think this is for you, right.
People in my extended business family.
I think that you have definitely successfully identified this as a not Brian idea.
but I do like that people are trying nutty things.
Well, look, I mean, here's the reality. There are a lot of people that are single through this pandemic that found themselves like very cooped up very quickly. There's a lot of like wondering, well, in a world where now I am more remote, who knows exactly how long this remote kind of thing lasts? Who knows if it ever will end? Or you're at a job that now you're setting a lot more of your own hours on. If that's the case and you're an outdoorsy person and you would like to functionally own a Sprinter van without actually owning a Sprinter van, this is kind of like an all-in-one lifestyle kit for a very specific personality.
Well, and keep in mind also that we are 20 minutes away from 5G being rolled out. We are 20 minutes away from Starlink being available all over the world. Like the only thing... The only resource that I could think of that is truly a pain in the butt to get anywhere would be internet, and that's about to be solved.
It's solved now.
Yeah,
like everybody can tether their phone to their laptop, and we're pretty much out of the era of that being something that was like controversial or costly. So I think if you are willing to live this life, this is a lifestyle decision, but in my mind, it doesn't necessarily look any different than lifestyle memberships for stuff in cities where it was like, oh, like now you can be a part of our little club and we'll have events and the things that you want to be cool, have a experience that not everybody has, connect with people that are like you. That's what they're selling.
Maybe that's beneath the surface.
I would not be shocked if they charge more. I can't imagine them making a ton of money on kitting out a bunch of Sprinter vans for $1,500 a month. But maybe.
It also occurs to me that this is not just a lifestyle that you're buying into, but a set of like-minded people who want to live a certain lifestyle.
Yep.
I.e. 20-year-olds who are looking to hook up. That's why we bought the house in the neighborhood that we did, because we knew it was a new development that was going to have fiber. And what we wanted was to be surrounded by a bunch of young 30-somethings.
Attractive 20-year-olds who want to make out.
Yeah, young 30-somethings. Who were going to have kids all growing up in the same cohort.
If you go read the website, they talk about adventurous, like-minded, willing to swing from one point of view to another.
Yeah,
those people who are rocking.
Well, yeah. Look, I think that if you were to draw a circle of people that would be very, very excited to live in a Sprinter van and polyamorous couples, it would probably be a significant overlap here in the Bay Area. But I do think that it's also it's a crunchier lifestyle. Like it really is like it's outdoor centric. And I'll tell you what, man, these Sprinter vans are currency. People love them. And if you have them, they are their own, in their own way, signaling to a different element of society. It is like owning a fancy car. It is like owning a Tesla. It is like owning a BMW, you know, back
or
in the day, or
a
Jaguar.
Jeep.
Like, yeah. I mean, Jeep signals probably to that, to some of the same people, but a Sprinter van is like that tiny home lifestyle that we could be out on the road. And, you know, hell, John Teasdale was out here working remote for his job and has one of those things and just decided to peace out and drive back to Vermont. And he had the ability to do so because he's got a van and doesn't have to worry about stopping at hotels or anything.
Yeah. Wave of the future, just like 1970s, which
yep.
I'm looking forward to the comeback of all those movies about van life. You know, go take a deep dive on Amazon Prime, type in van, and you'll see like there was like a 3-year window of just, you know, van culture just exploded. Gentlemen, let's do some picks.
Here, I'll do mine. It's boring because I keep picking the same thing, but it's the only thing we're watching. It's The Expanse. We were talking before the show about shows that take time jumps. Battlestar Galactica, obviously, was one of them. The Expanse certainly sharing some of the DNA of Battlestar Galactica and The Expanse are kind of in similar things, but we are in the third season now, and there is a big time jump in the middle of it that I was very happy about, but I'm not sure I'm in love with kind of where we've landed, at least right now, but I'll keep powering through.
So you're how far in?
We are about halfway through the third season.
Did you last time we talked about it, our noir detective was not your favorite character. How are you feeling about that character now?
He has returned to a position of being not my favorite character. he got into an interesting place. Okay. And then, he's returned to not being my favorite character.
So we finished Last of Us Part 2, played the whole game through with my 12-year-old. It's a mature title. You see some legitimately awful things. I loved it, and I understand anybody who didn't love it, because it is a very difficult play. It's the, you know, kind of the Empire Strikes Back of what I assume will be a trilogy. But if you'll remember the Empire Strikes Back, part of what made it great was that it was painful. It's a very painful game to play, although ultimately, and this is a full-on spoiler, Justin, the message of the game is that vengeance is a never-ending cycle, and nobody ever stops. Nothing good comes of it, and it's a circle that you watch happen, and it forces you to experience various parts of the circle, and all of them are unsatisfying and empty and make you feel awful about yourself. And that's the point. And then there's one brief point when, as one character, because you play multiple characters, you get to be the one to decide to break the cycle. And you also get to live with the choices that you made along the way. It's great.
I got a pick. Also a video game, not as heavy as The Last of Us, but I started playing when it came out on Friday, Ghost of Tsushima, the new open world samurai game from Sucker Punch. It's interesting. It takes place in it's a fictionalized war account of a Mongol invasion in the 12th century Japan on the southern island of Tsushima. And you play as one of the last remaining samurai after the Mongols come and run town. So it's kind of like the Assassin's Creed games, where you run around liberating different parts of the island, and you're upgrading and learning skills and getting technique points. And it's really cool. I mean, it's really gorgeous. It has a very striking design. Like there's falling leaves everywhere all the time, big weather effects. And like the gameplay is pretty good. I don't love Assassin's Creed specifically, but I do like open world games that have kind of a lot of different things to explore and to do, which Sucker Punch, who makes this, they made Infamous previously, which is also has a ton of that. And I think it holds up really well. The story is like pretty good in terms of telling you a war story, about the conflict, right? Like the main character has all this conflict of what is the best way to fight the Mongols, right? If you're a samurai at the time, what you do is you go up to someone and then you fight them, and then the weaker person loses and or dies. Where part of the story that this is telling.
Yeah, that ain't how Mongols roll.
Right. And so part of this is saying, well, Jin, what if you used stealth and thievery and sneaky moves? And how does that affect you, given that all of samuraidom before this says, nah, man, you just go and you fight and the weak loses. And so I think it does an interesting job of telling that. I really dig it. We played it on Friday on the Friday Night Bright stream. We'll probably play it more this coming Friday.
Did you ever play any of the Far Cry games?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you see that trailer for Far Cry 6?
I did. Giancarlo Esposito playing the bad guy in a South American or American country.
Let's call it what it is. It's Venezuela.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. That trailer and the story that they told in that trailer looks very good. I'd like to see what that game looks like.
Yeah. Man, those cinematics are so good. Like, literally couldn't tell at times whether or not this was computer generated or just straight up they hired Giancarlo Esposito. It was amazing.
Yeah, his capture is really good, and of course he's got that like really menacing tone, and this does the thing that Far Cry games have done the past few games, which is like, hey, the villain kind of is interesting, and like he makes you certainly see his perspective as a dictator of a country that is undergoing an anti-fascist revolution, but like recent Far Cry games, I wonder if it has anything else to say about it other than thought, huh?
I hope it's good. But really, it was like Far Cry 3 forward was when they figured out that, oh, wait, the villains are the stars of the show, not whoever the main character is.
Yeah, but also it doesn't, like Far Cry 5 specifically, which is all about like a bad cult. They enslave people and kill people and all that stuff. They really don't care about like dealing with that at all. Anyway, that's a longer conversation. Yeah. But Ghost of Tsushima, I'm really enjoying on the PlayStation 4.
I have a story. I messed up. I screwed up something. Uh-oh. I was supposed to send this is legit. I was supposed to send 2,000 books to somebody who's doing this promotion, and I was giving to them at cost. And they gave me the address. Like, here's the address. Have them shipped to this warehouse, like, as a service sort of place. When I went to go ship them, I pulled the address that was in all of their other emails. Like, this is like their Sigline address there. Cause I'm like, oh, I got to ship. Oh, there's the address I see all the time. So I shipped it to that address. And then I get this email last week. Like, hey, I just want an update on the books. I'm like, oh, they're going great. And like, and you shipped them to the address I specified. And I'm like, what? Whoopsie daisy. Nope, I did not. And then I'm like, yeah, no, we're not at that other address. And I'm like, okay, well, that's a perfectly normal thing to put an address you no longer have any connection to, you know, in your email. But it's my fault because they gave me the right address. I just wasn't paying attention.
2,000 books. Those are practically free, right?
So I'm having they're being shipped to like they were supposed to go to like Plano, Texas, and these were shipped to Dallas, which is not a terribly far apart from there.
So, yeah, it's in the Metroplex.
Yeah, but it's a distance in this, and I can't tell the person. So I'm like, what do I do? And I'm panicked, like calling, trying to reach people that I know in that area. And I'm like, oh, we're about to go on a trip. Oh, we're going over here. Like, oh, maybe here. And I'm like, all right, let's think this through. I just need somebody to get them from point A to point B. What do I do? Task Rabbit. And I end up, go to TaskRabbit, say I need to have somebody show up here. You know, I send an email to the other place like, hey, there was a whoopsie. These things are going to be there. I'm going to have somebody come there. As soon as they're dropped off, they're going to come pick them up and take them to the other location. So the problem was Amazon split what was one order into like seven, like five or six different deliveries.
Oh, Jesus.
It was a logistical pain. But what I did is I wrote up once, here's the task. Go here. Get all of the cartons of books that have this name on it. You know, they'll have a reception. It'll be stacked there, and you'll see an angry receptionist going, why are these going here? But just pick them up and then take them to this other location. So I had to do the task like three times or so to finally just get them all. But and it cost me a couple hundred, you know, maybe cost me like under $200 to get all of the shipments done. But for which I was willing to pay a lot more to fix this sort of thing. So basically, I'm a very big believer. It really helped me out a lot. I was able to get the books to where they're supposed to do, be able to do this remotely through another city. And it's, you know, it's sometimes you just don't think of what would I need to use it for. But then this was a case where I'm like, let me give it a shot. Let me try it here. We'd used it before. Like I've used it through friends and stuff for like TV production stuff to get things done. But here was a very critical situation and it was very helpful.
I will absolutely vouch for the fact that when you send something over to TaskRabbit, they own the problem. They don't just like phone it in. And I remember when I was given a air quotes free set of armor from John Teasdale, I had a TaskRabbit guy. I'm like, Task, figure out how to get this to me. And then somehow the free set of armor ended up being $850, $900. And I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of money. And then there's a pause. The guy says, it's a suit of armor, dude. Like, it was very clear that he had fully owned the task and was rabbiting to the best of his ability.
Yeah, I would say that here's the way I would say you want to use it. Getting things from point A to B where they're doing that is good. When you're asking somebody who you don't know if their problems, if they're a person like, oh, yeah, $900 shipped, like, there are cheaper ways to ship things. You know, like if you're getting somebody who doesn't understand logistics and stuff and is walking into the post, you know, the postal store and saying, oh, how much to ship this? And they're, and like, I don't care. Some other idiot's paying for it. It's not a good situation. You want to be very, 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 very specific. Well, about
and, stuff. And I will say legitimately, once everything arrived, I was like, oh yeah, no, I personally could maybe if I spent an entire day have shaved $100 or $150 off of this for the way everything has to be packaged and all of that stuff. So I felt like the price was fair. The guy was not phoning it in. He was really solving a very complicated problem of how to send a literal suit of armor across America.
Yeah, that's going to be very tricky. So that's why I say like, I was very happy. Like, again, think about like, would your average friend understand how to solve the problem, or, you know, would your friend who's out of work a lot be able to figure out how to solve the problem? Yeah. And I think if you're specific, I think if you're very specific, I know of other experiences where like IKEA like owns like TaskRabbit now. And I've seen situations where they'll send somebody to go put together somebody's furniture and I don't know what the F they're doing. You know, I've heard of, you know, situations where like they put the stuff together wrong because it's just somebody on task. Oh, I can go do this. And they show up. And they mess up your furniture, but like, oh, it's, you know, the bed boards aren't done right, whatever. And then you go, your mattress collapses and it's like, TaskRabbit, you know? So just be anything that's skill-based beyond like going from point A to point B, be careful. But point A to point B, saved my butt. So
good job, Task.
Gentlemen, next week's episode will be four Taskers doing this show. It's an intermediary step. It's been
wow.
Weird.
Can we try that as an experiment?
Brian, you know why you and I don't want to do this? Because we're afraid they'll be better than us.
I want to get four TaskRabbiters.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.